ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Where do you think job sharing would work and would not work? Perhaps you've had some experience with it that might illuminate the pros and cons for us. Lucy Bradlow and Bronwyn Bock want to trial it in politics. They've proposed running for the federal seat of Higgins together. Quite a few people have raised objections to that idea, but how straightforward is it in other workplaces, especially if you look at it higher up the chain of command? Can it work there for businesses and employees? Rosalind Dixon is a Professor of Law in the School of Global and Public Law at the University of New South Wales, and she's co-authored a report called Reimagining Job Sharing. Rosalind Dixon, welcome to Life Matters.
Thanks for having me.
Now, the stereotypical image of a shared job tends to be with non-leadership positions, which may be why it was so surprising when a couple of people said, let's make it work in politics. What does your research show, though? Is it best suited to less managerial roles?
Part of what we're trying to do in the research is challenge that thinking, but also adapt job sharing so that it's even better suited to leadership roles by reimagining it in a number of different ways. But the basic message is job sharing is a really powerful tool for, you know, unlocking talent, getting shared perspectives and making jobs manageable for all. And so we want to see them both in ordinary professional services roles and in leadership roles. So it fits as long as you adapt it at all levels.
We'll look at some of the nuts and bolts that you've explored, Roz, soon. But I guess we should ask too about how it's regarded in workplaces. It can be seen as a very gendered option. Is that a useful idea?
Look, I think people who don't know a lot about job sharing often wonder, you know, how can it really work? How does it increase the workload of managers to have two people, not one on the job? But in workplaces where they've done it for a while, it usually becomes a very valuable tool. People see the benefits for retaining and recruiting talent, for, you know, in some cases, two heads are better than one. So it's interesting, you know, the public sector's used job sharing for quite a while in a lot of Australian states and at the Commonwealth level. And in many of those workplaces, it's very well accepted, less so in the private sector, although that's changing. But the traditional model has involved two part-time workers, often mid-career women with care responsibilities. And whenever you have a particular arrangement that is dominated by mothers, you often see what people call the mummy track, a kind of sidelining of those roles for promotion or, you know, really big, tough, interesting assignments. And that's a problem, you know, for women who are looking for promotion and leadership, but it's also the loss of workplaces and men who might be looking for ways of accommodating demanding roles with health challenges, care responsibilities, other hobbies and passions. Mm. And so I think it's to all of our benefit if we can expand it beyond that traditional use.
Well, how do you crack open those assumptions and stereotypes if you've got a workplace that says, oh, you know, this is just for one sector of my workforce? Is it about convincing them that it is a value proposition for the business, not just the right thing to do?
Absolutely. And the business case is really strong, which is when we lose talented workers, there's always cost associated with recruiting, and there's also the retraining process that's extremely costly in terms of time and productivity. So once people have workers who want to stay and who might want a job share and can put that forward as an existing tool that's often legally required, but certainly in many enterprise bargains an option, I think businesses start to see the value. It's harder for them to imagine in the abstract, but then there have been, you know, people who drive EDI policy that have actually recruited roles where they invite applications from job share partners. So some businesses really get the value already. Some learn it by having, you know, valued staff who want to go part-time but make their lives work through job sharing, and others need to be pushed a bit, either by government or thought leaders in the area.
So, Roz, why does job sharing provide benefits that, say, just working part-time or maybe going freelance or contract doesn't?
So one of the things I want to stress is that flexible work is a toolkit, and it's a really important thing to understand that we need the whole toolkit. That's legally required. It's absolutely necessary to recognise the varieties of work and the different challenges facing different employees. So we need part-time options. We need work from home options and flexible hour options. And, you know, for some people, being a contractor or part-time is going to work better. There are lots of jobs, though, where the work doesn't stop just because you're not in the office or on the clock. And in those roles, it's really hard to be part-time because you often find that you work really late on the day that you're sort of stopping for the week or that you're contacted on your supposed day off. And for those roles, it's really valuable to have a second person sharing the load when you're not in the office. And then there are some jobs where by necessity we need coverage. You can't run a business 3 days a week and not be available for crisis management the other days. And you need someone who can pick up the slack. And I think in those more leadership or management oriented positions, part-time's really tricky, whereas if you structure it right, job share's definitely an option.
The relationships would be really important though, wouldn't they? I've been reading some personal accounts of people who've job shared and they're saying, look, we really had to present a united front, even though we might have had disagreement behind the scenes. We had to be basically a block to be regarded as an effective force by our workmates. How do you set it up within a workplace so that it's got the best chance of success?
Well, I think those stories are really powerful because you are a team and you have to operate as a team and people need some training and support to understand that. But the most important thing is that people should be able to select each other as job share partners. It's not something which is just an ordinary co-worker relationship. It's a really deep, organic form of cooperation which people need to have some agency around shaping and designing. And that means that either people need to apply for jobs together or they need to be involved in merit-based recruitment processes in selecting the job share team. Once you get those settings right, it's just about good communication and managers helping facilitate that. But I also think that we need to acknowledge conflict might happen, and that's part of why in our trials at UNSW we came up with sort of tools for managing that.
What were some of the tools for managing that?
Well, one of it is that, you know, in an ordinary job share relationship, if you have a disagreement, yes, you present a united team position, but you often go to your more senior manager and say, look, you know, Bob thinks this, I think that, what do you think we should do? But if you are the manager, there's no way to do that. And we do need to acknowledge that, you know, not all conflict is bad. Sometimes when we have disagreement, it's really important for getting different viewpoints on the table, being honest about our views. And one of the things we've tried at UNSW is to have what we call a senior job share partner or a vertical job share, where someone is made responsible for the relationship to more senior management or the board, and they're also the casting vote in the event of disagreement. Most of us understand that, you know, no hard feelings. If someone's the boss and they take a call, and if someone's the senior job share partner and they make a call, we can all live with it. It's just really hard when you don't have a deadlock breaking mechanism. And I've been in job shares where we've had that lack of a deadlock breaking sort of option, and it's been tricky because there has been disagreement. And so I think senior job share partners or vertical job sharing is another really useful tool for dealing with conflict, even while we encourage people to take a team-based, united approach.
We're speaking with Professor Rosalind Dixon, a Professor of Law at the School of Global and Public Law at the University of New South Wales. She's co-authored a report called Reimagining Job Sharing, and it's certainly busting wide open some of the stereotypes that we might have had about it. Ros, you also looked at other ways of managing that kind of get away from that traditional idea of two people, similar skills, similar seniority, sharing a role 50-50. How well did it work when you looked at, say, asymmetric time?
So the idea of asymmetric is that you could have 80-20, 70-30, 60-40, and it doesn't have to be split across the week. It could be split across the day or really flexible. And importantly, we did these trials for people who were working full time, but who basically had jobs that were more than 100% jobs, and they just were finding that they weren't able to give all of themselves to each part of it and still have time for themselves. And so we did 80-20 job sharing. One was a male-male job share and one was a female-female job share. And it was, you know, across different sectors in the uni, and it worked incredibly well, both for the teams that worked with those people and those involved. And it changed people's perception, because when you have two senior men working full-time job sharing, it cascades down the line in making it seem plausible and possible to lean into opportunity and still job share. It recoded the gender around it, and it made people see it in a different light. And so I think it was really helpful. And the other thing that we used the pilot to stress, and I've done another pilot with the Department of Education on this, is we can do it intergenerationally. So we can look at people who are pre-retirement, who are keen to keep going but looking to slow down and have so much knowledge to impart. And if you can pair them with a mid-career professional who's ready to step up and lean into opportunities for leadership, you can often create almost like a cadetship for leadership, but also huge sharing of knowledge and responsibilities, which can even shift over time as between who's senior and junior, but really unlocks a much broader pool of people, men and women, willing and able to job share, and recodes both what it means and the gender associated with it.
Yeah, it's almost like a kind of informal mentoring job share in that situation. You tell us a little
bit about
islanding and twinning, some of the kind of practical ways you can make it work.
Well, this is basically something that comes out of the management literature, and they've done, you know, management professors have done a lot of interesting work on this. But the basic way of thinking about it is islanding is project-based sharing. You know, you do this, I do that, we'll come back and chat about our progress, whereas twinning is genuine sharing, sitting down at the table to work on a joint project and tic-tacking who's doing what in a fairly fluid and continuous way. Mostly when you start a job share, if you haven't worked with someone before, you're going to start by islanding. You're going to divide and say, Bob, why don't you work on, you know, this event, I'll work on the other one, and we'll come back together to share ideas. Whereas when you have an organic, long-established relationship, or someone's sick or on leave or can't do an event and you can kind of pass the baton over, well, that's when you get twinning. And most relationships involve both. But when I've tried to convince people who are a bit sceptical, I've said, well, give it a go. Think of it as an islanding model. Give someone a project, see how it goes. And if it works, then great, go into twinning. And if it doesn't, well, it was a good try, and you've got some increased capacity out of it along the way.
Some really interesting texts coming in. Megan says, my husband and I are both optometrists, and when our five sons were younger, we job shared. It meant the boys had a really strong relationship with their father, and I had the sanity of work, says Megan. And also it meant he intimately understood how hard parenting is. Very useful if everyone's got the same experience of that. Another says, I know of a job share between judicial registrars who exercise judicial powers and are statutory appointments that was very successful. Not sure it's widely known, says the texter. Good example of a senior appointment suitable for job share. Magistrates in Victoria can also seek part-time appointments, says this text. And Ian from Kooroy in Queensland says, I've been a boss all my life in five different industries, mostly trade-related. He says, the businesses I had between 2 and 30 employees. In my world as the operations manager, it was always terrific to have more than one person able to manage a particular type of work. This way, if there were people required to have sick days or holidays, there was always someone to cover them and their specialty, which enabled me to be completely at ease regarding any absence from work. He says, I'm still in business now, no longer in the trade area, and I still practice this, enabling me to be much more relaxed and focused in business. So that goes to what you were saying about it can be a really useful business case for an organisation to have that redundancy built in. Just very quickly, Ros, in your report you talk about flexibility for the employee and flexibility by the employee, and there needing to be a bit of give and take. Can that be a bit of a slippery slope, though, for, you know, where what might look like a flexible work arrangement ends up with you working full-time and only being paid for part-time?
Absolutely, and it has to have a lot of protections built in, and some people might decide that part-time's better for that reason. All I was stressing in that regard is that if you're in a senior role, it's unrealistic to expect it to be a strictly 9-to-5 or 8-to-6 arrangement. There are going to be needs to communicate and be available to communicate when you're not, you know, on the tools. And part of what we need to understand is that job sharing has a lot of benefits in coverage, but it depends critically on communication. And you need to be able to share knowledge and perspectives even when it may not be your day. I think when people are not empowered, where they're, you know, more junior or don't have a lot of bargaining power, one has to be particularly worried about that. But the more senior people are, the more well remunerated, I think it's fairer to expect them to be able to push back. And I think they need to go into a, you know, job share with the appreciation that it's not for everyone. It works really well for lots of people and for businesses, but only where there's pretty seamless communication, and that has to be part of the mindset and the package.
Yeah, sounds like a great template for just about any organisation. Roslyn Dixon, great to have you on the program today. Thanks so much for telling us a bit about your research into job sharing.
Thanks for having me.
Pleasure. Professor Roslyn Dixon is a Professor of Law at the School of Global and Public Law at the University of New South Wales.
ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.